Hey everybody, this is Real of Thieves, and today we're talking to Chris.
How's it over there in Pittsburgh today?
It's good. It's good here. I'm grading midterm, so I mean that makes it less good.
Oh, do you mind me asking what you do for a day job?
Yeah. So I wear a million hats at the moment because I am a doctoral candidate at the moment.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Which means I am currently doing research, teaching, therapy, and being a student all at one time. It's very fun and exciting.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yep, I wear every hat.
So I really, really enjoy your show. I'm a big fan of Gotham Outsiders. I loved your last episode you did on Under the Red Hood. I thought that was really great.
Thank you.
And I'll there is a link in the show notes. Please go check it out. And it's kind of a different take on Batman.
Yes.
Would you mind just talking a little bit more about maybe how initially you started getting into Batman and kind of DC stuff?
Yeah. So for me, Batman has been like a lifetime love. I was one of those kids who grew up on the animated series, you know, watched it religiously, just was so obsessed with Batman. But when I was younger, I always found comics very intimidating. There's like 1 billion of them. And I remember specifically going into a comic store probably as a preteen and getting the, oh, a girl, go away, ew, kind of reaction from people.
That's terrible.
I know. And I pretty much went, well, this is not for me. Clearly, I'll stick with the cartoons after that. And it took a really long time before I got actually into them. So I got into comics in college when I discovered a whole bunch of queer comics fans who were like, no, 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 we can show you the safe places to shop. And it was great. And then, you know, at the time, they were all introducing me to things like Giant Days and Lumberjanes and these really fun, like more indie comics and stuff like that. And I was really loving it. But I was like, you know what I want to do? I want to go back to Batman and see if I can get into that world. And I, at the time, being at that point an undergrad, had no money. So I was like, what does the library have? And I just went there. And the only thing they had that was a volume that had a one on it was Batman Eternal, which I have since learned is an insane spot to jump into a comic. But I picked it up and I was obsessed with it. And I went, who are all of these people? I didn't know there were more people in the Batman family. And I just got very obsessed. And I started chasing down titles for each one of the family members. And I really loving it. So when I was getting very hyper-fixated on Batman again in my life, I was like, I need a podcast. And at that time, you know, I was starting to listen to some and they all reminded me, and this is no offense to people out there making it, it's very possible I just didn't listen to everything. I just want to say that off the bat. But the ones that I was listening to all reminded me of going to that comic shop and being gatekept out. And I just got so frustrated. And one day I just tweeted, what if I made a queer feminist Batman podcast? And it was a joke. And I was like, haha, what if I did this? And suddenly everyone who followed me was like, yeah, Chris, why not? And from there, my best friend TJ wrote, kind of slid into my DMs and was like, hey, if you do this, I will be your co-host. I've never read Batman, but why not? And I was like, okay, why not? And we recorded one just on a whim and we had so much fun. And I'd been trying to get TJ to read Batman for a long time. He's a Marvel guy. So I was like, wait, if I do this, you'll actually read Batman? And he was like, sure. And it just kind of went from there. People rallied behind it a lot. And, you know, we call ourselves the outsiders because we are queer, we are feminists. You know, the people we have on are usually in some way that, or people of color or progressive or something of that nature. And so we're like the outsiders in the comic world and we come together and the podcast has become such a safe place for people and our fandom is a safe place. It's lovely.
Yeah, that's what I really like about it because for me, like I really started getting into queer theory stuff when I was in college. I was doing a lit theory class and we literally went from Middle English to modern.
Yes.
And it was cool. I loved it. And my first example was really going through, it was a Seinfeld episode.
Oh my God.
Which was there's nothing wrong with that. There's anything wrong with that episode. And then Hannibal comes out.
Yeah.
NBC's Hannibal. And I was like, oh, yes, this is everything I ever wanted out of this series.
Yes.
This is everything I ever saw. And to see people doing that and gender bending it and everything, I was like, No. This is the direction things need to be going.
Yes. Did you lose it? Did you lose it when the creator was like, yeah, they're gay?
It made so much sense. It makes so much sense, though, because those are the only two people that understand each other. That's the only time he's ever going to ever have any sort of intimacy and connection with anybody is someone with this extreme empathy disorder.
Right? Oh, I know. I was just like, Brian Fuller was like queer baiting. No, no, no. It was queer correct.
Absolutely. I mean, I actually have like an art book of it. I have the food of Hannibal. I'm total Fannibal.
Yes.
And one of the things that's really bothered me for a while is kind of this, and it's not knocking the perspective. It's really kind of what you're talking about, this idea of almost like a, I guess like a Nietzschean Batman, I guess is a good example, right? And it's very like, and it comes really from Dark Knight Returns, and it comes from those kinds of things. And because those are the highest selling ones, a lot of people, especially in the film world, are really more concerned or really see a lot of that kind of influence, that year one, year two, or Dark Knight Returns. So to see people going, no. Here's all these other characters. Here's all these other ways we can look at this. He has a family now, guys. Did you know that?
Exactly.
He's processing it. He's processing it. We can do it together. You want to do it together? Oh, you want to watch a Joker movie? Great.
Yeah. God, it's true.
Now let's keep going. Yeah, but like that's the thing that's always kind of frustrated me and my friends about kind of the Batman universe. But I do love like things like Long Halloween, and I do love Arkham Asylum, and I do love those for what they are, but it to me it never was like, no, there's no like singular culmination of any superhero. We have these eras, we have these ages, you know, and it was really refreshing to see you, and it's done so well, and I really appreciate it.
So sweet.
Do you think that really like the Batman universe or like DC in general is really kind of nailing queer theory right now for comics? Or is there another like major publisher that you think is doing as good, or maybe DC is really kind of that hallmark? Where are you thinking?
Oh, okay. I kind of have multiple answers to this. So
please give them all.
if you want to go where the queer theory is, I would say you got to go outside the big two and go straight to the Webtoons app. So,
okay.
My other podcast is Thirsty on Toon, and my other best friend and I review Webtoons.
All right.
Yes. And that is where the canonical queerness goes to live and flourish. Like, it is beautiful that you have indie creators as well as creators that are more mainstream creating these comics with way less restrictions than regular publication would. And it's geared younger. So there's like teenagers are very accessible for them. Everything is free, which means it's very accessible in that way. And we have queer creators. We have people of color creators. It's beautiful. So if you want actual diversity, Webtoons. But as far as the big two, I actually think there's been a huge shift because Marvel was definitely first on the scene as far as like having queer characters, having actually well-represented diversity. But they have slacked. I'm not saying it's because Disney bought them. But something happened in the last few years that changed significantly. Who could say? But it really has. Like, the queer characters have been sidelined. They've, you know, X-Men was full of queer characters. Where are they now? Or if they're there, we're not going to talk about it. Like, Kitty Pryde kissed a woman. We're never talking about that again. Like, that's in the...
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, X-2 has a very, like, definitive scene with Angel. You know, and it is very much a coming out experience that is written... And how the X-Men and Xavier's kids kind of come in to really kind of save him and go, no, we have a safe place for you.
Yeah.
Too. It's such a beautiful moment in early comic book films. And you're right to kind of lose that. I hope that now that we're going into everyone has a multiverse and more kind of, you know, everyone's got their secret menu of characters now.
Right. we can kind of
bring that back. Yeah, I'm hoping.
Hope. Do you remember? I think it was also... Yeah, it was X2 where Iceman is with his family. And have you tried not being a mutant? That whole scene?
Yes!
So explicitly gay! Oh my God! And then later in the comics, Iceman is canonically gay? And I was like...
I love Iceman. He's literally my favorite growing up. I really enjoyed Iceman. He's so odd. The Angel. X-Men was really my first foray into this. That and Batman the Animated Series.
Right.
Are really the two that really brought everything in for me. So, I mean, I guess especially when it comes to early X-Men stuff in the 90s, it does make a lot of sense that I would eventually gravitate towards this kind of stuff. Right. Because I'm like, oh, no, I loved this from the beginning.
Yeah. And let's not lie. The queer theory in the X-Men movies is jacked up.
It is.
You got the, like, but clearly X-Men as metaphor for gay, but also here's a vaccine that cures it. And I was like, oh, you did so good, and then you did so bad.
Here's Senator Goebbels over here.
Right? Like, oh my.
I have the vaccine.
The mutants are under the floorboards, aren't they?
Dear, it was a, wow. They tried.
Don't worry, guys. Brett Ratner's got a great idea.
Yeah, for real.
See Rush Hour? Did you guys see Rush Hour? Yeah, this is going to be great.
It's going to be fine. Don't worry. I'm sure he can handle it with delicacy and nuance.
It's called speculative banking.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, you know, it was making big swings and also big misses, but at least it was swinging, which was swinging more than now, where they have them making such a big deal. They're like, Loki's bisexual. Not that we're going to say bisexual. And also he's gender fluid. Not that we're going to say he's gender fluid, but it's in a file that you can only see in the credits and it is blurry. So you'll have to screenshot it.
Yeah. And it's with himself, which is right? Another Game of Thrones level I wasn't anticipating.
One was gonna fall in love with himself, it would be Loki, though.
Yeah, when you look at, if I was Tom Hiddleston and I looked into a mirror every day, I'd have trouble. I'd
think, yeah.
Who can beat this?
There's no one that matches.
Taylor did for like 2 weeks, and then.
Right? Oh, so true. Oh my God, you brought up Taylor Swift, you know me. But to finally answer the actual question, so it started as Marvel, but DC has taken that throne. Like, it has absolutely bypassed Marvel and having canonical queer characters that are taking the front seat. I mean, that John Kent, the current Superman, comes out as bisexual and they make a huge deal of it. That's big. I mean, Tim Drake is queer. They didn't realize how big of a deal it was, but they're finally getting it. They're like, oh, this is going to be important. You know? Wait, somebody, one of our friends of the pod, Jadzia Axelrod, pointed out that the Bat family has more queer characters than any superhero family. And it's true. If you, Tim Drake, if we're talking about John Kent, if we're talking about Harper Row, Kate Kane, you know, the canonical queer characters in the Bat family are so many. We got a Midnighter, like, you can just keep going. All of the Gotham City Sirens are bisexual. Like, yeah, absolutely.
Let's turn to the films for a second, because we are a film history podcast.
Yes.
What would you do? I know we're coming up on a new one, and we've only seen trailers and stuff, but prior to this, pre-RPAT Batman.
Yes.
Has there been a really, like, solid Batman film for you, or you're still waiting?
All right, no, absolutely. There's a definitive one. I doubt our paths will pass it. I don't think anything will. The answer is Lego Batman.
Thank you, Jesus Christ, that you said that.
The only accurate Batman movie. I will fight anyone.
No, you're right. I'm on your side. Give me a spike bat.
Thank you. It's the one that genuinely is like, no, we get what Batman is, and we will encompass all of it. The good, the bad, the weird, the serious. It's all there. And he has a family. And he, oh God, it's just perfect.
Yeah, what I love about it is, and you really only get that with this cast, because you've got people that are in recovery for, like, a number of things.
Yes.
Right?
And
they're bringing in their trauma work into this film, especially at the end when you finally get a reason in a film that's so blatant. And I love that it's for kids, because it's very important for children to have emotional growth and get used to that first.
Yes, please.
Because it's so insane. Yeah. You know, it's so crazy to try to go through all this and be like, no, algebra first. But
oh my God, please. Thank you. Let's fix the academic system while we're here.
Why not?
Why not?
But I love that he just sits and there's that moment when he's like, I went away because I was afraid that you'd go away without me doing it first. And I was like, that's it.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. Everything that's wrong with him. And this is the first one where it's like, I'm going to confront my actual enemy this time. Right. The Joker isn't actually my enemy. He's my coworker.
Yes. The Joker arc in that one, I don't like the Joker. Anyone who listens to my show knows this, except for the Lego Batman Joker. That arc is perfect with Lego Batman's Joker being like, I just want you to admit I'm important to you.
It's such toxic, like, attachment.
It is.
It really is. I forget which animated feature, but I saw there was a little clip where someone unmasks Batman and the Joker flips out.
Yes, and he's like, he doesn't want it.
No, that's not how it was supposed to go. Yeah. It was supposed to go on forever. Now I have literally nothing left to live for.
Right. Now I'm this in. This is my life.
Now I have to sit down and read the Myth of Sisyphus again and figure it out.
Exactly. Oh, it's so much in every way. Look, I enjoyed the Christian Bale Batman movies when I was a teenager and had low emotional development. Sorry.
I'm right there with you. I was like, the Punisher is a great guy, actually.
Right? God, it's true. Yeah, it makes perfect sense to your teenage brain. You're like, sure, why not? I'll do this.
His family's dead. Of course he'd go on an endless revenge spree.
Right, and then I'll throw on Boondock Saints after that. But...
We're just talking about our state. That's all it is.
It is. We're fine. But, you know, and I still enjoy that. Like, I still enjoy watching them, but I can't engage with them in that way anymore because I'm always just like,
no.
Okay, self-righteous Christian Bale Batman. You're like, no, I'm doing this because I'm a hero. No, buddy, you're doing this because you don't believe in therapy. Like, be honest.
Most honest scene in that whole trilogy is when Lucius Fox comes into the surveillance part and goes, what the fuck are you doing?
Right.
Holy shit. And he's like, no, I'm the only one that can keep anybody safe. And he's like, what? No, no, I'll shut you down right now. I'm your dad.
Exactly. Narrator voice. And that's when Lucius knew he'd fucked up.
And that's when I knew. Things were going downhill from there. I had to talk to little Brucey Bruce about that cave he was in.
I just want one Batman movie from the perspective of Lucius or Alfred or both. Just like it just turns into a slice of life with them waiting at home, like stressing over it. I think it would be
that's
great.
What I'm hoping for this new one, because you've got Andy Serkis there, and there's a piece of me that's like, Matt Reeves and Andy Serkis have worked together a very, very long time. And he's been very integral to a lot of his work, especially in fandom stuff like this.
Yeah.
So to have him in there, I'm like, this might be the one where it we get something like that. Because even if it's only one or two scenes, when he's like obsessing over that chalk outline, I bet you Alfred comes in at one point and is like, go to sleep.
Yeah. It looks like you haven't had a vegetable today, Bruce. No, truly,
I gave you broccoli with your fish sticks.
Truly. And the one of the writers, Matt Tomlin, just came out with a Batman comic called Batman Imposter, which is very internal and very like Batman is literally forced to go to therapy or his therapist will break confidentiality and reveal that Bruce Wayne is Batman. That's the threat. She's like,
what?
Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
I had no idea.
Yes, it's so good. Leslie Tompkins. Yeah. So she's his therapist and she's like, legit. You come to me every morning before your patrol or I will reveal your identity to the world. And they do therapy. It is so good.
That's everything I wanted to see. I want to see what happens with that because the thing...
Yes, go read Batman like, Imposter.
That is like, it's literally Batman in The Sopranos? That's great.
It's amazing. And that is one of the screenwriters on this new film. So I'm like, ooh, okay. I'm willing to be patient with the fact that you made Riddler into a serial killer, which I feel weird about. But
I feel like they're really leaning into Sherlock Holmes, though. I mean, you're shooting it in London. His house looks like Baker Street. Like, it's just a very first. So I'm excited for that aspect of it for sure. I'm not necessarily like ready for like the Crow Batman. I do think if there's any time for Crow Batman, it's when Limp Bizkit's back on tour. But
I might actually be ready for that.
But I mean like well I want to if it's like too edgy, I'll be leaned a little too far in. But that one fight scene in the teaser trailer. Yeah. Really did sell me on it when they're all looking at him. And I was like, is this also Drive?
Yeah.
Is this also Drive? Is this right. the elevator scene from Drive? Because right. if it is, I might be sold for an entire trilogy yeah. of this.
I feel conflicted about this movie. Yeah. It looks cool. And then I'll hear details that I'm like, that's silly. How are they going to pull that off? Like the fact that his bat symbol is made out of the gun that shot his parents made me laugh for like 20 minutes.
That's the part where I'm like, it's too edgy. It's we're about to get a new, like we already have a new Under Oath album. It already
right.
came out.
If Evanescence is on the soundtrack.
Spirit Box 100% should be.
Just, there's definitely a moment where it's just like, wake me up inside.
Yeah, no, and that is not, that's not a slight to Spirit Box that, not, or any of the new stuff coming out. No. Please don't attack me. I actually do like it. I'm not going to lie.
I do too. I just am really not do. Sure. I'm not sure the world could handle that much emo Batman.
Yeah, I also see, obviously, like, him and Catwoman going, really yeah. leaning into kind of the tragic, unrequited yeah. love. Yeah. And I mean, that is also another trait of Sherlock yes. Holmes, especially it's with true. The Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlock.
That's true.
You know, when he does really the Iron Sherlock thing for her, yes. and I was like, yes. She's Catwoman.
Yeah, she is. Yeah. That's a really good point. I'm excited to see it. I definitely yeah. want to know.
Yeah, I really do. I think that's actually going to be where we end it. I think we had a really great time.
Absolutely.
I would love for everyone just to hear everything about your shows. Where can they find both your shows? And yes. do you have anything upcoming that you'd like to plug?
Yes, absolutely. So you can find Gotham Outsider anywhere you find podcasts. You follow us on Twitter at Gotham Outsider. My other show is Thirsty on Tune. We are on the Talking Comics feed. So you can subscribe to Talking Comics. You'll get all our new episodes. Or you can follow us at Thirsty on Tune on Twitter and Instagram. I also write for TalkingComics.com, where I review comic books and other books, all kinds of things, usually queer, if possible. And you can check me out any of those places. And if you want to find all of that, you can follow me on Twitter at The Myth of Psyche.
All right. Thanks again, Chris, for coming on. Thank Absolutely. You for being our first guest. If
I'm
you
so
ever
excited.
Want to come on, do anything, please come back. We would love to have you back.
I
Thank
would
so
love
much.
To come back, absolutely.
Yay! That makes me excited.
Yeah.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody. We'll see you next week.